If I say, oh, I do social media, and then somebody over here says, well, I do social marketing. Well, you know what? Those are two totally different things. If you take the word social out, media means one thing, marketing means another. And social is just the platform that you do it on. But we put social in front of everything, and now we think it all means the same thing, and it doesn't.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
So what have you been up to?
Working hard, trying to launch a new product, and trying to get my little, you know, website together.
Your little website together.
Yeah, man. My birthday was recently, and my followers kind of bought a domain for me, which is my name, johnlawson.com. Remember we talked about that?
Yeah.
I guess I was telling a couple of friends of mine in the industry, and I was like, man, I can't get this guy off my name. He wants $1,000. I think he's crazy, you know, all this, right? So they got together in the back and was like, well, you know, his birthday's coming up. Let's run an Indiegogo campaign for his birthday.
Sweet.
And they did, and raised the money and bought the domain and gave it to me.
That's cool. That's very cool, man. Are you still doing a lot of speaking gigs, or what's going on with
that? Yeah, I will begin speaking in about 3 weeks, you know, because December, January are usually slow. I got three gigs to hit, and then on and on and on from there. We'll make it work.
It's funny. I was talking with Shankman about that, and he said the best thing to do is put out a book in January, and then you have a bunch of new material to send out, and you have speaking gigs for the whole year.
And he needs speaking gigs. You know, I mean, seriously.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just he told me that's a tactic, which works.
That is a tactic. I think the book really propels you into another. I mean, that's what it really is.
Yeah, because I was looking at your book, too, not too long ago, because you gave it to me. What made you want to write the book in the first place?
There was so much going around at the time about social media. I mean, it's, you know, of course, you write the book and then it goes through all its edits and all that crap. So it's been like 2 years since I actually sat and wrote this book. But at the time, it was like I kept seeing all these social books coming out and I'd read them and I'm like, you know, even though there's so much information out there, I still felt like I had a voice that was a unique voice and something to say. I had wrote a few things and did a few interviews and somebody said, you should really write a book. And I'm like, really? You think so? Really? And I got together and put together a draft and an outline and then started shopping it. And once it got picked up, then I was like, oh, okay, I guess I gotta write it.
How much of that book did you actually write?
All of it. Every last word.
Before the editor got a hold of it and rewrote the whole book, how much did you actually write?
I did 4,000 to 6,000 words per chapter, all right? And I got a co-author with me. And really how it all came to pass was I had Deb and her husband write blog posts for e-commerce. And they were writing one and they wanted an e-commerce expert from eBay or, you know, to do an interview. So they called me up to do the interview and they were going to write it into a blog post. And it was just supposed to be a blurb in a long blog post. Our interview ended up lasting for an hour. We just talked and really just went over a bunch of different stuff. And by the time it was over, he's like, man, that was some good stuff. I'm going to talk to my editor about maybe expanding your input. And so I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Then he comes back to me a day later. That was her husband, Brad. He comes back and he's like, well, my editor's okayed it and we're going to make it into a 3-part blog series. I was like, really? Oh, that's pretty cool. All right, fine. So, I mean, I've done interviews. I've done print before and had people kind of interview me and then write a story. But when I read this story that they had done, it was sounding like me talking directly to the audience. It was amazing. And so when it came to writing the book, her husband was the guy that said, you should write a book. And I was like, okay, fine. When they gave me the contract for the book, I went back to Deb, who was the person that really did all the writing that sounded like my voice. And I said, look, I want you to co-author with me. And she's like, well, you know, I could do it, you know, and, you know, what do you call it, a ghostwrite. I'm like, nah, I'm too authentic for ghostwriting. People know I can't spell. So I was like, no, I want to put your name on the cover too. But, you know, I want you to help me with this because you really translate what I'm trying to say in a way that is on paper readable. And so I pulled her into the process. And what we did was I would write the 4,000 to 6,000 words of a chapter. She would get that, and then she would interview me. So it would have both my tone and the way I speak, but also it would have the content for the writing. And she put that all together. And she was very instrumental in making sure that the book flowed with a story. What she did was fantastic. What I did was the meat of the whole thing. So that's how I wrote it.
Yeah, how long did it take you to write each chapter?
You know, the whole process was 3 months.
3 months, okay, cool. Why don't you write one every year? That would probably help you with the speaking gigs.
I hate writing.
Why don't you get those interviews done and just get another book?
You know what? It's almost time to start doing another book. So I'll probably go back in one more time and dip into the well.
The funny thing is, I've seen quite a few of these social books, and I think most of them are garbage. But there's this one part that I really remember out of your book. And it's just you simplified something. And I've been kind of showing that to people all the time. You took the phrases social media, social like campaign, social e-commerce, just whatever, right? And you took the word social out.
Out, yeah.
Yeah. It's like such a mind-blowing thing to people. It's just e-commerce. It's just media. Take the word social away, and then you see that what you really need to focus on. Because most people, when you tell them, like, you know, yeah, dude, I'm doing social media and social marketing and getting Facebook likes, and it's like, what are you even talking about?
You don't know what you're talking about. And that's true. I mean, because we've taken a compound word. So we've intertwined. If I say, oh, I do social media, and then somebody over here says, well, I do social marketing. Well, you know what? Those are two totally different things. If you take the word social out, media means one thing, marketing means another. And social is just the platform that you do it on. But we've put social in front of everything, and now we think it all means the same thing, and it doesn't.
Do you actually remember how you broke it down? I would love if you just like went through those really quick, because that was awesome.
Let's say the compound word was social media, social marketing, social network, social commerce. If you take out social, the only thing you have left are media, marketing, network, commerce. And all of those things are in totally different spaces.
And I love that. Like, I've been pointing people at that when they start talking nonsense to me about being a social media expert.
Well, then you first need to be a media expert, honestly.
That's what I'm talking about. But it's like, because they think they know Facebook, they call themselves a social media expert. And also to the listeners, like, I've been approached by so many social media guys to be interviewed, and I said no to each one of them.
Oh, wow.
And I want to just make sure that the listeners know why you're on here and why I think you're legit. And that's because you have an e-commerce business. And I don't know how much you'll want to talk about that, because we really went in depth when we talked about that before. But man, you blew me away with that thing.
Really?
You
wow,
did.
Wow, there because you go, guys. I thought it was because we liked sushi. I mean, not sushi, I'm sorry, because we like noodles. I thought that's what it was.
That's what it was, yeah.
That's
but
what
it's
it was.
Like the thing you were selling and the numbers you were telling me about. And I was like, you know what? This guy knows what he's doing.
Here's the other part, when you talk about social, I'm not a social media expert at all. And the book is Kick-Ass Social Commerce, because it is about, I don't care if you like me, you need to buy something. That's always my approach with social media. It's the social as it relates to the commerce. And I need all the other components, but ultimately it has to funnel into a sale.
That's awesome. So I had a call from a buddy of mine the other day. He got a chance to do a social media campaign. Now, just I know that word already, like it's making you think. And he's like, yeah, I got $2,000 to play with. I've never done it before. And he says, what should I do? And I told him, well, what do you mean by social media, right? Give me a why. What are you trying to accomplish? What's the goals? What kind of questions should someone like that ask a company before they even take them on as a client? Can you kind of go into that? If you're just trying to find out from a company that doesn't know anything about the internet, but they want to get social marketing done.
Well, I mean, you want to really kind of break it down into some of the components that you can use social to establish with your customers. I mean, brand awareness. Okay, good. If we need more brand awareness, then we can put together a strategy for social for that. Or customer relationship. And personally, I think one of the things that social people, if you're just starting, the biggest area for growth and gain is to interact with your current customer base. And if you do that, as opposed to going out and trying to find new customers, they, your current customer base, will give you the ammunition you need to go out and attract new customers. So I think if you're just getting started, that's an area that you want to set up, because that's going to pay for itself over and over and over again when you turn a customer that you've engaged with once into a multiple buying customer. And then once they become that, they become a social cheerleader for you and they start spreading your message. So that's another area. Of course, you got promotions and you got making more sales. So you really want to find out from them, I think, what's most important for us, and then create a strategy for each of those components.
But like you said, build relationships with your current customers. Let's say I do have a company, but I'm not active on any of the social sites. So I don't have these customers either following me or liking me. How do I get a campaign like that going?
Yeah, absolutely. You want to start asking for their information after the sale. Now, I don't do it before the sale, because the most important thing is to make the sale. I see people putting like me on Facebook on their checkout page or their home page. I'm like, why are you doing that? Don't let people leave the process once they're in the process. But right after the process, that's when you can talk to them about liking your page or giving me your social information, or you already have their emails, so you can go back to them and talk to them about their social engagement and getting them to start liking you. People like stuff for free. So if you give them a discount, here, 10% off your next order if you like our page, guess what? You'll automatically have people going in and liking your page, and they'll come back and spend the 10% with you.
What if the company just says, I want more sales? And like anything you try to tell them, they're just like, oh, I don't know, whatever, just make me more sales. So
absolutely. That's all we all care about. That's all we care about. As a e-commerce person, as a business person, all we care about is making more sales. I love everybody with the flowers and the bubbles and peace, love. I get it. You know, social media is all about peace and love. Yeah, whatever. But I believe everybody wants to make more sales, no matter what. So the deal is, if you have that in mind when you start, then you're not just going out trying to, quote, engage people. I'm not trying to get engaged necessarily. I'm actually trying to have sex. So what you have to do is before you get, I'm being funny, but what you have to do is you have to use the social to start dating the people that you want to really get engaged with or, quote, have sex with by making them purchase. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? I don't know. You know,
I'm with you so far.
Yeah, I got my partner in the room. He's just cracking up. He's like, you're crazy. But I mean, that is the deal. So let's not put a front on what we're doing in the social space. We know that ultimately we want to get these people into the funnel for purchasing. That is the value that I can add to a business. And so when you go and you talk to a business about their social strategy, you do need to tie that in to how that is going to increase their top and bottom line. And they'll listen to you. All right? And I just think that's the most important thing that you can bring to them. So how does that happen? Well, you have customers that you're already dealing with right now, and you're not engaging these customers at all. So you know the lifetime value of a customer is X, But if we get them engaged and they come back and they purchase to us, let's say they purchase now just 3 times a year. But if we get them engaged and we get them to purchase one extra time during that time span, if we know the lifetime value is over a year, they'll make those 3 purchases. If we can get them to make one extra purchase through our efforts in engaging with them, that will increase your top line by 25%. Is that something that you're interested in?
How would you get that done, though? And how would you track it? Because a lot of the times, if someone buys from someplace online or just sees you online, it's kind of hard to know that they came from that actual place and not somewhere else.
And that's getting so much better now. It's getting, and it's really going to take off. I think this is the year where social commerce really takes off. We've seen both Facebook and Twitter start adding and testing the buy button so people can actually purchase inside of social, which will remove a lot of that. The Facebook stack that they have allows you to track customers all the way into the cart. And of course, your call to action needs to be very specific so that you can track whether or not they're using that code that you gave them from the advertising that you put out there in social. So, I mean, those are just a few ways.
What kind of call to action?
I mean, if you're giving them a code to use, then that code needs to be specific. So if I say it's a 10% off code, but I would say it'll be like FB10 off, you know, FB10 off. Okay, now I know that one came from Facebook. I'll do the same advertising. I might use the same sort of creative on an Instagram or a Pinterest, but my code will change. So if it's Pinterest, it'll be PI 10% off. And I'm able to track.
I see. So you mean from online sales. What if someone finds you online through your marketing but buys offline? How would you track something like that?
You know, I mean, you're just not going to be able to track everything. Thing is, once we put into place certain things, overall, if your sales are increasing, you want to look at the components, but you're not going to be able to track everything. And I mean, that's a conversation you want to have realistically with your customer, because you know, if they're doing social media for a client, if you want to have that conversation. It's like, realistically, we can't track everything because people get made aware of something while they're interested and they might not purchase till weeks later. You can get engagement and awareness without the purchasing that might come a little bit later.
I'm just curious how you handle that, because I bet you run into that a lot too.
Well, we do, man. But I mean, the main thing is that I focus in on where their current customer base is, because that's a lot easier to track, because I can push things to them through their emails, because I believe, and I think we talk about this in the book, most definitely, is like social is the top of the funnel. Ultimately, I want to get your email. Because once I get that email address, now I know I can track everything. I can track how many times this thing is open. I can track how many times this link is clicked, whether or not you took advantage of the link. So one of the big parts of the funnel is we want to build your customer list by using social media. So I'm not really of the mindset of going to social, get people to purchase. No, I'm of the mindset of going to social, get people to give you the permission to market to them and then market to them.
I see. So you're going after the opt-in first.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I mean, you're still doing the other components for awareness, brand affinity, all of those kind of things. But we want to get permission-based email marketing.
What do you think works better for you? Is it free offers when you get the opt-in, or doing some kind of a tripwire where you sell something really cheap just to make sure that person opting in has some money?
So it depends on what you're really trying to get to. If they're in the buying mode, then, you know, the trip is going to work really great, and hopefully you get the upsell. But if they're just browsing around and you give them extra information on the things that they're trying to do with your product, so let's say right now, I remember we were selling bandanas, and the thing that we did was show them how to fold a bandana in multiple ways. And we gave that away as a video absolutely free. And that drove so much traffic and awareness to us as bandana sellers that it was like, wow, oh, that was a light bulb that went off in my head. It's like, okay, if you give them good quality content that teaches them how to use the product that you sell and that they are interested in purchasing, they will put together in their own mind that you're the guy that I should be purchasing from, because you know how to do all that stuff.
So for commerce, for things like bandanas and, you know, some of the smaller items, what do you see works best? Is it eBay? Is it Amazon? Is it Google Checkout? Because I know people are going nuts about Amazon right now.
Right, yeah. Everybody loves it right now. Why not? Amazon. We love Amazon. Amazon is not your friend, though. Amazon is your competition. But that's okay. I get it.
Why don't you explain that one?
Here's the deal, man. And I was just talking to my partner last night about this whole concept of what Amazon does. It reminds me of Kroger's, which is a giant supermarket here in the U.S. And what happens is Kroger's, any supermarket, has a limited amount of shelf space. All right. Amazon does not have a limited amount of shelf space. So they allow everybody access to their shelf because it's ever increasing. Correct? Fantastic. So what the supermarket chains have done is, since they have limited amount of shelf space, they only let certain vendors in. But then they instituted a thing which you put on your keychain, like a little key fob, that you would join their club, right? So you would become a frequent shopper at Kroger's. They give you this key fob, and when you go check out, they'd give you discounts on your whole bill. You know, it might be a 5%, 10%, 2-for-1, whatever specials they were running. What that was doing was allowing them to actually track what people were purchasing, which Amazon does. They can track everything that a person purchases, whether you're selling it or if they're selling it. And once they find things that are fast moving and high profit items, they will then, like the supermarkets did, once they found out the things that were able for them to produce that were high trafficked purchases from the everyday customer, they in turn began producing their own private label brand of that thing. So if you had Del Monte tomatoes, now you go to the supermarket, you've got the Del Monte and the other one and the other name brand, and then you've got the Kroger brand version, which is the private label branded, and it's like 30, 40, 50% cheaper than the actual name brand. So what's happening, and what you have to realize with Amazon, is that they are able to track overall what the purchasing habits are of all their customers. And if it's all of their customers, that includes all of your customers. So I'm not saying that it's not something that you can use. I'm not saying that you just have to keep and make sure that you are aware that they are at some level your competition.
That's something that Google and eBay could do as well. What do you do to protect yourself from that in the long run?
Well, for one, eBay of the past have always said that they do not compete with their buyers and or sellers. And that's true. I mean, eBay does not sell any products of their own. Amazon, on the other hand, does. Google does not. Well, yeah, a little bit.
Not yet.
But you know what? I'm not as worried about Google, because Google has a poor track record of selling hard goods.
That's true.
I mean, a very poor track record. So I'm not as scared of them as I am of others. Amazon has a great track record. But Amazon is getting ready to have other competition that they have not had in the past. I think the landscape of e-commerce has changed so much, and the landscape of brick and mortar commerce has changed so much, that these guys are really starting to look at Amazon, since Amazon is in the top five now of commerce merchants worldwide. Now they're starting to take notice and saying, you know, e-commerce is the area where we need to be playing, and playing very seriously. So people like Nordstrom's, Macy's, Walmart, it's about to be a little bloodbath. And I can't wait, because it's going to be good for those of us that are independent. Watch.
What kind of changes do you think will happen in the next few years?
One of the things is, I think with the adoption rate, I mean, of mobile, I mean, mobile right now is at like 93% of people in the entire world have mobile, right? So now that we have this computer in our pocket, it kind of changes the landscape. It's not all about e-commerce anymore, because I don't have to necessarily be shopping either at my computer in my house or at the store. It's now becoming this blended world. And I think that is going to play pretty well for those that have a brick and mortar presence, because you can have things where you're walking past a store and suddenly your phone gets a text and boom, you get a deal off. Or if you're walking through a store and you go to a specific section, you can find a special while you're in that store using these beacon technologies. So I think the blend of having mobile in your pocket plus beacon technology is going to change what we have considered commerce overall. And I just think we're going to drop the E. It's just going to be commerce. And all of us are competing for that dollar or that franc or whatever country you're in. I don't know.
What kind of an impact will that have on independents like us that don't have big brick and mortars and usually put our stuff on Amazon or eBay or Google?
I don't think it's going to have much of an impact over, because we're a small component of the market, you know? So I don't think we're going to see that as much. What I do think we will see is greater opportunity for us to get in with this social thing and get people engaged with us as a brand, because these guys can't offer the same boutique services. There's always going to be a boutique, and we've got to realize that we are boutiques. So if you guys are out there and you're just doing, let's say, an FBA where you're purchasing products and you send them to Amazon's FBA, which is Fulfillment by Amazon, just to warehouse your product and you sell it through that platform, start thinking about how you can expand to other platforms and to your own website, because that will help to cushion any dips that you might see from competitors. Because I've witnessed a lot of people, man, that have I got a friend, man. He did pet supplies. He would go and get these, and he said the other day he's at the show and the pet supplier is like, yo, you know, Amazon just came over and started talking to us about selling our stuff to them directly.
Damn.
And he said, you know, he said at that point he realized that all he really was, and not all, but he said, what I really am is a sourcer for Amazon. And if you figure yourself as a sourcer versus a salesperson, then it changes things. Then when Amazon gets on a SKU that you're already doing, it doesn't freak you out because you're already bringing in more SKUs. So that's what he does. He's constantly sourcing product because he knows at some level Amazon will probably jump in and start making their own cat house.
Yeah.
Be aware of that. There's a possibility. Always.
So I think the people doing the Amazon things, and there's a lot of them, especially in Southeast Asia, most of these guys are all doing what you're saying now, sourcing.
I know.
They think they're building up businesses, but it's...
Yeah, they're not.
No.
See, that's exactly it. You are a sourcer for Amazon. And if you have that understanding, then nothing will confuse you. But if you put on these rose-colored glasses of I'm building a business, you're going to be out of business in 5 years. I've watched them do it on eBay. See, that's the thing. I watched them do the same thing on eBay, and here was the difference. On eBay, these guys, they would go out and they would find product in China, right? And they'd get the products and they'd bring them over here and sell them on eBay, right?
Right.
What happened was the marketplace changed because eBay opened it up so that Chinese manufacturers could go ahead and sell directly on eBay themselves. So it cut out the middleman. So anytime you don't realize that you're just the middleman, then when you get blindsided, it just messes everything up for you. You're just a middleman when you're doing that. You can't build a business on being a middleman. That's not a business. That's a job.
I don't think most people realize it. And I've mentioned that to a couple of them. Like, nah, you don't know what you're talking about, man. Amazon's going to be around forever.
Man, ain't nothing around forever. I'm sure that Macy's thought malls would be around forever. You just got to constantly be looking for new product. That's all. Create new stuff all the time. Yeah, isn't that what you do?
Pretty much. It's just continually pushing new things out, yeah.
So you're constantly making new stuff. You have to. We all have to.
Yeah, I mean, shit, even with the podcast, if I just stopped doing them, people would stop listening. I mean, it's like, that's that simple, right? All right, John, if people want to reach out to you or talk to you or find you, where would they do that?
You just email me, john@colderice, colderice.com, or you can follow me at colderice. I'm colderice everywhere. Colderice on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, colderice, colderice, colderice.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review in iTunes, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebel. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.